Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
He's the man who's teaching small business how to embrace social media, the king of tweets.
Oh, they have the internet on computers now. To start, press any key. Where's the any key?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for staying with me. My pleasure to continue to be with you. And you're going to be glad you're with me because we've got Ted Fishman back on the show. Ted is a longtime member of our Brain Trust, the author of China Inc., How the Rise of the Next Superpower Challenges America and the World. And Ted has joined us many times over the years and to talk to us about his reporting on China. He's a former trader on the mercantile system there in the Chicago area. He's a journalist, and more importantly, though, for us, he's our good friend Ted Fishman. Welcome back to the show.
Great to be with you, Jim.
It's good to have you back. And I said mercantile. Actually, I should have said commodity. A commodity trader, but I guess mercantile is
Chicago Mercantile Exchange.
Yeah,
they have some commodities,
called.
But they also do the big financial indexes like the S&P 500 and the Treasury bond and all that. I mean, not the Treasury bond, the Euro bond.
China continues to be in the news. People are fascinated by it. One of the things that just happened that I'm going to have to change some of my way I use China, they just surpassed Japan as the number two economy in the world.
That's right.
That's pretty dramatic because in my speeches, see Ted, I tell people that the number one economy on planet Earth is Small Business USA because America is the largest economy on the Earth, and small business is over half of the U.S. economy. So the true largest economy is Small Business USA.
I like to do these calculations too. You know, China has, by all counts, the second largest economy in the world right now. And we sometimes get morose about that, but we forget where the U.S. is in relation to the rest of the world. You know, we have a close to $15 trillion economy.
Yeah.
So you could take a lot of segments of that.
It's over half of the next nearest one, which until a month ago or so, a couple months or whatever, sometime this year, was Japan. And there was a time, I mean, listen, when I started reporting on, when you and I started talking about China, Ted, over 5 years ago, maybe more, China's economy was about one-fifth of the U.S. economy, and now it's approaching half of our economy, isn't it?
Well, I think in one of our very first conversations, we did the math, and we said, well, China's five times our size. All the Chinese people need is one-fifth of our income to be equal to our size, and they're growing at around 11% a year. They're going to get there.
Right.
But there is some very interesting data out this week from Credit Suisse, which is the hidden trillions in China, because China is not a country where the rule of law always means the most, and people
right.
have other things. And it says a lot about China's consumer power, which is that these extra sources of income for the Chinese people actually make the Chinese population $1.5 trillion richer than any official report.
Is that like a barter or a black market economy kind of thing?
Well, it's just everything that doesn't go through the official reporting.
Right, which would be local bartering and just the internal churning inside of provinces or something like that.
It would be all kinds of things. You name it. It could be businesses that just don't report, things that are the cash economy, the underground economy, the
some pretty primitive areas in that country. Where I would think that people there's not a lot of cash that floats around there. What do you think?
It's surprising, and just about anywhere you go in China, there are people so far at the bottom of the economic scale around people who are so much at the top. And actually, these hidden income numbers reveal that that the wealth gap between the top few percent and the bottom is much wider than people expected.
Yeah.
Chinese government put it at 23-1. These new numbers put it more closer to 65-1.
Wow. Was it you that told us that China's middle class is the size of the American population?
Yeah, it's getting a little. It's going north of that now too.
I also heard another statistic, and I don't know that if who I got this from, but one of my brain trust members, either you or one of my demographers, and that is that China has as many advanced placement students as we have students.
That's right, as many university graduates as India and the U.S. put together.
Wow.
You know, and this is an opportunity for small businesses, I think, because it shows that there's a lot more spending power for Chinese consumers than anybody imagined. And also, it puts pressure on the Chinese government to raise the wages up from the bottom for the lowest rung.
Right.
Which means that there's opportunities for businesses that can create efficiencies at home for U.S. producers.
I want to talk about that opportunity for small business, but I also want to talk, I want to stick with this idea about this new position that China has in the marketplace. You know, what's that going to do? Is that going to make them more empowered to be a little bit more dominant in their thinking? And we'll do that after these messages. 20 till. Stay with us. Now can you tell me? We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Thanks for staying with me. Thanks for hanging out with me, being part of my day, and allowing me to be part of yours. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Hope you check it out when you get a chance. Lots of multimedia things there. You can read, you can listen, you can ask questions. Check out my blog. My knowledge base is there. You can subscribe to my newsletter. I hope you will do that. We'll send that to you every Sunday afternoon by email. It'll help you get ready for the week ahead with some of the stuff that we have in there. And I think you'll like the newsletter. I'm very proud of the way it's continued to evolve and get better. And then, of course, on our homepage, we have a poll which you can take. We'd like to know your thoughts on a different topic every week. So check it out at smallbusinessadvocate.com. Having a great visit with our good friend Ted Fishman, an outstanding member of our Brain Trust, the author of China, Inc. And you got a new book, Ted, coming out in a few months, and which we're going to talk about. We're going to launch on our show when it does. Remind us about the title.
It's called A Shock of Gray, and it's about the world we live in as families are smaller and people live longer. It changes every important relationship.
Right. And is that going to be an internationally referenced book?
Oh, yeah. I've reported it all over the world.
You want to talk about the demographic issues of Japan and China and Europe, et cetera, et cetera?
Yep. Spent time in all those places, and it's rich in storytelling, which was...
Right,
a wonderful experience.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. A Shock of Gray, and you're gonna let us launch it on the show when it's ready, right?
I'm looking forward to it very
much. Me too.
We appreciate
that.
One of the things I'm looking most forward to.
Well, thank you. Okay, we're talking about China, and by the way, Ted Fishman's book China Inc. Is available wherever books are sold. And Ted, one of the things you told us once before, when I asked you once several years ago. Why doesn't China play by the rules? Will China ever play by the rules? Especially, I was thinking about international intellectual property protection, and you said, Jim, don't forget this. China doesn't follow your rules; they make their own rules, and they will expect us to follow them in the future. And so with China coming on as the second largest economy on the planet. Is that not going to embolden them to be even more like what you said?
Yes, absolutely. One of the things that's changed dramatically in China's rhetoric is its commitment to open markets. The status quo system of free trade suited it so well when it needed money coming in and exports going out.
Right.
But now China has entered a new phase. Where it can create national champions and globally scaled firms in just about any industry you can imagine.
So you're saying that their attitude and their behavior about free trade, whatever glimmer of that we've ever seen, you're saying that's going to be drying up?
Yes, and there's nothing philosophical, there's nothing moral in the world of free trade. Countries use it when they think it suits them,
right.
And they reject it when they think it suits them.
Right.
And in a way, that's the business of government, is to make your people richer.
Somebody once said that countries don't have friends, they have interests.
That's right. I think that's a good way of putting it. And China is very, very pragmatic in this regard. We've transferred to China all the jewels of the world's technology. China has a robust university system.
Well, what we didn't transfer, they stole.
Well, both. we've allowed to be transferred.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put it that way. But China also extracts technology from companies that want to do business there very powerfully. They make it conditional. So all of our
like the way they've dealt with Google.
Yes, exactly. And there's some chilling things in that Google example. And part of the scary part of that story is how China's activity towards Google has really favored the Chinese player, which is Baidu. And, you know, we're partner in that, too. You may have noticed that when Google had to pull out of China and then cut back its operations in China, American investors flocked into the Chinese stock, into Baidu.
Baidu, tell the audience what Baidu is.
Baidu is the Chinese Google, and it abides by all of the rules China sets for companies there. So it's a willing censor. It's a willing partner to the government.
It's a search engine according to the Chinese government.
That's right. And the strange thing about the new wave of Chinese protectionism is that the world of investors will support China's protectionism if they see that China's new policies are building new companies inside China to take on the world's
giant. Capital is not necessarily a moral force, is it?
No, and you will see all the same rhetoric from the world's global companies about free trade and everything else, and yet they will be investing in the companies that take advantage
of China's
protection.
And is that going to come back to haunt them one day?
Sure, it already is.
Tell us how that will manifest.
Well, you can hear it in the voice of GE executives, for example. They were so gung-ho, no pun intended, on China for so long. China was going to be their next big market. They were going to equal their success globally in China. They would never say anything bad about the Chinese government, complain all the time about the U.S. government. But now it's reversed. China's making life difficult for GE on lots of fronts. It wants companies that compete with GE in virtually every big sector.
Mm-hmm.
And the current CEO of GE, Jack Welch, the whole...
you mean the former Jack Welch?
No, the current one, Jeff Immelt and Jack Welch, are both taking strong stance against China these days, which is an absolute turnaround. And the only reason they would take strong stance against China is if they felt like in some ways it was game over.
Right.
Otherwise, they wouldn't risk it.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. Give us the website for the book, Ted.
ChinaInc-book.com.
We come back. I'm going to get Ted to tell us is there any opportunity for small businesses. Is it game over for small business in terms of China? After these messages, Ted Tell, stay with us. Clapton bringing us back. 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Thanks for staying with me. Ted Fishman is our guest. He's our good friend, the author of China Inc., which is still one of my favorite books on the planet. Can't wait for his next book to come out, which we're going to launch in a month or two. Ted, earlier in our visit, you said something about opportunities for small business, and I want to come back to that. After all the things you've said about how the rules are changing in China, the game's changing, or as you said earlier, game over for some folks, that China is really going to start. If we thought they, I guess it sounds like you're saying, if we thought they had sharp elbows before, wait till tomorrow. But does that preclude opportunities for small businesses?
No, I think in some ways it expands opportunities for small business. If you think of it this way, that. You know, a lot of capital spending in the United States was put off when companies could go to China and get their manufacturing done there.
Right.
They could replace capitally intensive factories with manual labor.
Yep.
They could take advantage of the whole low-cost ecology in China.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're seeing in the East Coast cities that there's wage pressure up in China. That China has to make the same capital investments to make quality improvements as the rest of the world.
And they're getting global pressure on their environmental issues, too, aren't they?
And they're getting global and domestic pressure on the environmental issues. So China has political pressure to push wages up. It has all kinds of pressure to improve its factories. When you look at capital spending in the United States, you see that that is one of the promising areas in leading towards our economic recovery.
So two things you're saying, that as wages go up, that makes more of an opportunity to have a market for small business exporters?
I think it's a market for small business exporters, but it also increases the market for small businesses that provide solutions to American firms.
And
American firms are going to be coming home.
They're going to become. In fact, that's happening right now, isn't it? I mean, we've read recently that more and more companies are bringing their manufacturing back to the United States.
Yeah, I mean, what you're seeing is that they're bringing manufacturing back. It's still a drop in the ocean that way. But what they're going to be looking for is solutions to make their manufacturing more efficient. So
if
you look at the numbers on hiring, it doesn't tell you the full story on the opportunities for small business because, as you know better than anyone, Jim, what small businesses do is they offer opportunities to make companies more efficient.
Right.
They offer better solutions.
That's right.
So I think it's more important to look at the capital spending here than the hiring here, because when you get capital spending, you need technology solutions, you need to outsource all your services, and so on, and that's where small business comes in.
Here's a good example. I asked a man who built a paper plant for the company he worked for how many of his employees use technology, and he said 100%. I said, how many employees do you have? He said, half as many as the plant I built 10 years ago.
That's right.
So what you just said is what he said. In other words, he uses more technology, and instead of 800 people to run this plant, he has 400 people.
Well, but if
which
you look
sounds,
at his...
Which sounds like maybe we've lost employees, but if they're coming back from China, we've gained 400 employees.
And I bet if you look at his relationships with outside firms that provide him with services, they've grown.
No question about it. He does a lot of business with contractors.
Right. So... you know, when you look at these large manufacturing numbers, we've lost so many millions of manufacturing jobs since the year 2000. That's because, in many instances, small businesses have come in to provide the solutions that
right.
need to be provided in-house. And
right.
I think those opportunities are going to grow as China gets less and less competitive.
And as small businesses bring those jobs back, and as they employ those people in more of a micro way than a macro way, they'll do it without unions.
Well, they'll do it without unions, and I think there's another trend.
That'll give it more of an opportunity to be efficient.
Well, a lot of these businesses are going to be started by the managerial class that has been asked to take early employment.
Right.
Early retirement. And
mm-hmm.
they are networked in with their old industries. They know their industries, and they can serve their former niche very well with their networks.
So there's opportunity for existing small businesses to look around, and it might be like third degree of separation from a direct relationship with China. You might be third down the line or so. It might be indirect that way, but also for new opportunities to start new ventures.
Absolutely. This is going to be, as usual, the most dynamic sector in our economy, but the demands for that dynamism are going to come from the big players who need small business to step up and serve them.
Hey, Ted, from your mouth to God's ears, God knows we need what you just said to happen. Hey, Ted, give us the website one more time.
ChinaInc-book.com.
Hey, Ted, enjoy the visit as always. Come back real soon. Look forward to the new book.
Thank you, Jim.
See you next time. Ted Fishman, ladies and gentlemen. What a great resource he's been for us. We're very grateful to have him available to us. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingham, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you that when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.